Hey, got the morning show with Aaron, and in the studio I've got our community board chairperson, Dennis Amor. Morning, Dennis.
Morning, Aaron.
So we had a community board meeting on Wednesday, and all seemed to go all right. Quite a quick one, actually.
It was, yeah. It was very short. I guess Blue Float's presentation was the longest part of the meeting.
But, yeah, and there's not really community board business, but they were doing a PR thing, I guess, to come and tell the community what they think they might be planning to do.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I think if we start to think about what the opportunities are that they could bring to the community, that's what we need to start thinking about. You know, it may be 5 years away, but, you know, we're talking about billions of dollars being spent just off the coast. And sure, all the heavy lifting will probably come out of Taranaki. But there's a lot of service vessels that are going to be working out there. There's going to be a lot of vessels going out every single day and things like that. A lot of manufacturing that's of a smaller scale that possibly has to be done and things like that. So there's an opportunity for Raglan businesses and the Raglan community to benefit from what they're doing out there that we need to start thinking about now, that, you know, how that could work.
And they have, the representative did say that they do like to do that. I know people will be cynical about that. But we have seen with Meridian that they did keep their community fund going for, well, that's still going.
Still going, yeah.
So I think the corporate sector is aware of the importance of good relations with the people in the areas where they work. So, yeah, hopefully you guys can leverage that a little bit.
Yeah, I think then that's what we've got to look at. You know, Nathan did talk to us about the Meridian Fund while he was here, yeah. And that sort of thing and how that worked. And I'm sure they'll be open to sort of supporting local organisations and things like that as well, yeah, as part of the development.
So I think the thing, what do we need to say? So they said they're not even at the feasibility study stage yet. And that when and if it happens, it probably wouldn't even like come online until about 2033, I think was when he laid out the timeline. So for people listening, this is a long, slow process, and they might do the feasibility study and change their mind as well.
Yeah, they haven't actually made an economic or a financial assessment of whether the project would go ahead at this stage, and he said that'll be after some of the assessments that are presently done.
Yeah, and that it will be 22 kilometres off the coast.
Yeah, so we're looking 22 kilometres off the coast. So he was talking, what, 50 to 80 metres of water? And that sort of thing. So they did do, and I went to an earlier presentation with Tony Houston and that sort of thing, probably 9 months ago now. And they did. There was some modelling done showing photos of what the turbines would look like from, you know, up on Bryant Home or by the, whatever it's called now, by the surf club anyway.
Yeah.
And looking out, and, you know, they were only just visible.
I was surprised you could see them at all. I haven't seen those pictures yet. The fact that they were offering pictures, I thought they must be a little bit visible. But you also need a clear day.
You need a clear day and, need a bit of elevation to see them and that sort of thing. So if you go on their website, there's probably copies of the photos there.
Yeah, I think they've done, he said because they're doing another one down in Taranaki somewhere.
Correct.
And that website is a little bit more set up. There are pictures there to give an idea. He didn't say, but you might know, how tall were they going to be?
Yeah, I do know, but I've
probably taller than the ones here on the left.
Oh yeah, the 15 megawatt wind turbines. So, you know, the ones out here I think are 2.2 or 1.8 or something.
Oh really?
So these are significantly bigger. Yes.
They'll be monstrous.
Yeah, they are huge.
And there'll be restrictions on people in boats where they can go, how close they can get to them.
Yeah, well,
although who's watching, I don't know. Cameras.
And that sort of thing. But Nathan was sort of saying any small vessels are not going to really be a problem too. There might be a so-called exclusion zone of 50 metres away from the base of the turbine, but that was all he was talking about. But during construction, obviously, because of the size of these things and the size of the shipping that'll be out there doing the installation works, he was talking about a 500-metre exclusion zone around each turbine.
Yeah. And the turbines are over a kilometre apart. I can't remember the exact distance.
Yeah, he indicated it'd be at least a kilometre apart.
Okay, so yeah, it won't look like the wind farm here.
No.
At all, it'll be quite different, yeah. Okay, so that's, hopefully we might, when we make an article about this interview, we might try and get some photos in it as well so people can see what we're talking about. But that is a long way off. In the open forum, complaints about the rates, Dennis, I always want to remind people the rates do get spent on things. Like, we do get benefits from the rates. It's not just a vacuum cleaner attached to our bank account. So, I mean, do you like to emphasize that as well, or do you politely listen when people complain about rates?
Well, to a certain extent, you've got to listen, obviously. And I think a lot of it is a misunderstanding, and probably the way it's presented as well probably doesn't help. When we talk about there's a 7% change in rates, everyone looks at, you know, there's not many of us that look at the back of our rate bill and say it's broken down out of 10 components.
Yeah.
We just see that, no, that's not 7%, that's 8%. When you do a calculation, and mine went up 7.9% if I did that basic calculation. But if I look at the general rate contribution and I look at the uniform annual general charge, those two only went up by 7%.
Right, and the other charges, what are they like for water and things like that? No, not for water, for other services.
Well, you've got other things. For example, your stormwater went up 11%. So, you know, it's only $238 on my bill, but it's still a significant percent. Other things like the wastewater, which is $1,300 for me, went up by 9%. The district-wide water supply charge, not sure why, but it went up by 17%. And for me, that was $403 from $344. So, you know, those things have gone up by significantly higher amounts, which obviously, when they're totaled up, yeah, they mean your total rates bill has gone up by more than 7%.
One possible explanation for a lot of those services going up is there's been such a focus on keeping rates down over the last few decades that there's been kind of some chronic underinvestment in council services. That's my understanding. Do you see that as well?
Yeah, and I think that's pretty obvious in Raglan with the wastewater system, and then we've got some pretty significant expenditure coming up there in the next few years. And if the community of Raglan on its own had to pay for that, then, you know, we'd see a significantly larger increase. Whereas that wastewater is right across the community, because there's also developments going on in other areas or upgrades going on in other areas. And it's shared right across the community.
And we should actually point out that thing that people always worry about, that the development costs are rangatahi and not borne by us, the ratepayers who don't own a house there. Well, that's what Alison Diaz, the chief financial officer, was trying to say. Is there more nuance?
Well, I think it's a little bit how you look at it. They definitely do pay a significant contribution to the development costs associated with the subdivision. Where the issue becomes is that, you know, you throw another 500 houses in there and you've got to upgrade the whole of the Raglan sewerage system, they're not really paying a big chunk of that. Mm. You know, so where you've got mains lines, and Alison did allude to that, where you've got main infrastructure lines that subdivision feeds into, and a sewerage plant or wastewater treatment plant at the end of it, they're not necessarily, are they contributing probably the fee cost of that increased development into those major infrastructure projects.
The irony is that when they set up Rangatahi, they wanted to use an ecological version of waste processing on their site, but the council had just invested a lot of money in upgrading the sewerage works at that time, or some kind of development, and they needed the development fee from Rangatahi to help pay for it, so they weren't allowed to do that.
Okay.
So, yes. I mean, that doesn't happen every time, but that's just kind of the stuff that goes on. Another aspect of it too is house valuations, and we know that if a house price goes up, that might affect our rates. But what wasn't discussed in the meeting is just if your house, say your house price goes up 100% over the 3-year period, which has actually happened in some places, like in Huntley, it happened a little while ago. That doesn't mean your rates are going up 100%.
No, but I'm not actually sure how that valuation is calculated, you know, and the percentage increase in valuation is calculated in those rates.
Yeah. What I remember from the last time they did this, and it's quite a few years ago now because of COVID, was that the urban house prices went up much more than rural house prices, which resulted in an effect of almost a rates cut in some way for people in rural areas and quite a hike for urban areas. So, yeah, you don't really know. I don't think we know until they come out we're going to see, because we don't know what's going on in the rest of the district.
No.
And I know, and Huntley, surprisingly, well, perhaps not surprisingly, but they had a big hike, because you think no one really wants to spend money on real estate in Huntley, but people were. And for the 3 years up to like 2017, there was a massive increase. So, yeah. I guess we're saying we can't predict that.
No, we can't predict what's going to happen with the valuations. And unfortunately, what have we got? Valuations next year.
Yeah, coming up.
That sort of thing. So it'll be interesting to see how that has too, because of the whole flexibility at the moment in the housing market. you know, I think sales are starting to pick up, but are prices picking up, or are prices still at that, you know, lower point that they went down to over the last 12 months?
We do a little bit of advertising for some real estate agents, and I don't really feel like it's died off that much. Not, it's not like summer, like there's always a flurry in summer.
Yeah.
But it hasn't completely stopped like it has done in the past in other years, like pre-2010, it's really stopped.
Yeah, but is that so the number of, what you're saying is the number of sales are continuing, but what's actually happened?
Where, with the prices,
they trended down or not?
Yeah, and we're such a little hothouse here with our little community on the coast, we might be different to the rest of the country anyway.
Oh, I think to residential areas like Hamilton, we are probably quite a different, you know, market.
Yeah, yeah. All right, I guess, do you think the rates are personally too high, like, or is it, are we in a situation where the rates are too high, but we have to have the services as well? Like, that's kind of what it feels like.
Yeah, my gut answer is yes, the rates are too high.
Yeah.
You know, I'm paying, and I'm happy to say, $7,000. And, you know, if you're a pensioner paying sort of that sort of money, it's not really sustainable. And I've raised this with our local councillor and said we've got to seriously think going forward that, you know, we just can't keep putting rates up 7% year on year on year from here on in. Because it's not sustainable for a lot of people, unless you definitely want to drive a different sort of demographic living within Ragland. Because, you know, historically it's been a retirement town where people have lived and retired into the town and been able to stay here. But that becomes difficult if you're a pensioner paying those sorts of numbers.
Quite low income. When you looked at those, not the school deciles, but the government has various ways of calculating, and Ragland has traditionally been very much at the low end on income. That must have changed. We'll have the census figures will probably be out in the next few months, and we'll know, but I would expect that's changed, but we're still not like central Auckland.
No, I think we've got to look at it, you know, what other funding is, and there is other government funding that I think we've got to make sure, as a community, we've got to make sure council is really switched into, so that we, rather than use ratepayers' money, we actually optimise exactly every cent we can get out of government funding.
Yeah.
You know, you look at Hamilton City Council and make announcements, they've got $300,000 for housing or infrastructure development associated with housing development to put into that sort of thing. You don't sort of hear those same announcements with the Waikato District Council.
Yeah.
And I think, we need to make sure our council's really switched on to whatever opportunities there are from central government.
Okay, all right. One thing we should mention, though, is for people on low income and retired people, the council does have schemes for helping out. Some of it's just rates deferment until you pass and the kids sell the house.
Yeah, my kids latched onto that. They weren't overly happy on that idea.
Yeah, I suggested it. I know, and it is a little bit like, leaving a problem for the next generation, but also it is a potential solution for people who want to stay here.
Well, it's a bit like spending your inheritance before you pass away.
Yeah.
You know, and if people are in that situation, I think, you know, you do have to consider those sorts of things. So they are, and they are there if people are in those situations where they're in dire needs of some sort of financial support.
Yeah, and you can also get $500 or $600 or something like that off if you can prove that you're on a low income. But there's not a lot of people these days who own a house who have low income.
No, but you could be retired and just living off only your pension.
Yes, and that's probably quite low.
That would fit into that category.
Okay. All right, I think we've done rates to death. What else was mentioned in the... Oh, yes. What was the fishing club talking about around the... Something about bollards at the airstrip? They wanted more park. They didn't even want parking space.
No, they just raised the fact that we'd pulled down a perfectly good 6 or 7 wire fence and put in bollards in place of it, and wanted to know what the community board knew about it. But the reality was, it's just one of those things parks and reserves have obviously done out of their planning.
Yeah.
As a community board, we weren't informed that I wasn't informed that this, that it was actually happening.
Well, you should be the first one to be informed if anybody is. So
yeah, well, it's one of the things we'll be raising with Parks and Reserves Manager, and because Lisa and I have teeing up a meeting with him on several other things, as to, you know, how he's going to inform the public on what he's doing in the district prior to them happening.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's, you know, they've spent a significant amount of money over there, and you've got to say, well, is there a benefit for it, and what are they actually trying to achieve other than making it aesthetically a little bit more pleasing on the eye, probably.
Yeah, and also they have a question about the fence put up between the campground and the soccer fields, which is about 1.8 metres high. It used to be able to, you could hop over the fence. Every time the ball went over, you just hop over and get it. Now the ball goes over, someone has to trek down to the corner and get it. And so they're probably like, well, the fence will stop the balls, but kids kick the soccer balls higher than 2 metres in the air. So it's kind of made a slight difference in the number of balls that go over the fence and made it a lot harder to retrieve them. And
yeah,
for what benefit the campground gets, I don't know, but it looks a little more prison-like with the fence that's there.
The camping, the Papua Holiday Park has had some issues at times with people coming in and out of the camping ground that cause security problems for them.
Yeah,
and the fence is partly for security and that sort of thing, and to try and discourage non-residents from that are staying in the camping ground from wandering in the camping ground in the middle of the night, and that sort of thing, and becoming a problem.
Okay, it's still got gates in it though.
Yes, it has, but I'm not. It has, but I'm not sure. Are those gates free access, or they got a pass on them?
People were able. I haven't been doing soccer this year, but I saw a game last weekend, and people were just going down to the fence in the corner, the gate in the corner, and going through. But okay. Maybe they lock them at night.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah. Okay. All right. There's some minor detail. This is, we talk about things that seem so detailed, but that's the way of it. There was a lot of discussion about Sound Splash getting ready for the new Sound Splash at the start of next year. And what's the lowdown with that, Dennis?
Well, they're going through the land use consent process at the present time, and it sounds like they've put a whole lot more, or requiring a whole lot more information from the Sound Splash management team on certain aspects, particularly around health and safety, transport management plans and things like that. So they're working through that, and they've set some dates for November to have all that information in and to make some final decisions on how things will be managed. They did talk about they are going to put on buses from Auckland and Hamilton, which will travel directly to the reserve, and things like that. But they're only talking about 1,000 people taking that up
so far. There's possibility of more, but we don't know. Yeah,
but they've also indicated that they've dropped the maximum number of tickets down to 8,000 this year, and that sort of thing, which means there's 2,000 less people to be transported.
Yeah, that might be a crucial 2,000. We'll see.
Well, if it's the last 2,000, yes, it does make a difference. But they've also indicated, and I'm not sure really how it would work, but they've indicated that people will have times when they'll be picked up and transported from the airfield up to the reserve.
So when you get your ticket, you're told turn up at the airfield at this time rather than everyone turning up at the same time?
That's what it sounds like. I'm not sure if that work, how well that will work if you're travelling with Auckland with 5 different kids from 5 different families who have brought their tickets all 5 different times, and one's got a ticket for 8 o'clock and one's got a ticket for 2 o'clock.
I guess it might not be perfect, but you've got to try.
Yeah. So that'll be interesting to see how effective that works. So sounds like council are waiting on the final all the final submissions on the various plans that they've got to put in before they make a final decision.
Yeah, and Sound Splash has hired a specific consultant as well to help with their management plan.
Yes, they did mention that.
Sounds like
I've forgotten the name, but yeah, they did mention that they had someone that they were employing to give them advice.
Because it also sounds like whenever council wants you to do something, they want lots of paperwork in the end, and having someone who actually is used to filling out council paperwork, it's got to be handy. I've filled out council paperwork in the past. It can be quite arduous.
Yeah, so they were talking about the dates of, the concert itself, I think, is on the 19th to the 21st of September, of January.
Yep.
So they were going to start set up on the 8th of January, which struck me as quite early, and then be off-site by the 29th of January. And then the setup on the airfield was from the 15th to the 24th of January.
Yeah, because they're trying to get more sun shelter?
Yeah, there's more health and safety stuff to go in there, so more shelter. More toilets both sides of where you check in and check out while you're waiting for the buses.
Yeah.
More drink stations, things like that.
Okay.
So, and plans have got to be all in by the end of September, is our understanding.
Which is earlier than last year?
Yeah, it was much earlier than last year. And last year they disappeared off to Australia, so not a lot happened before Christmas, unfortunately.
Oh, yes. Okay. All right. So that's the discussion at the moment. In the meantime, nearly all the tickets have been sold. I think there's 400 yet to be released.
Yeah, there's...
So 7,600 sold.
Yeah, something like that. Yep.
Yeah, okay. We keep waiting to hear about what's happening with this potential for CCTV cameras here, but it doesn't sound like there's any real news.
No, I've asked that question several times, and there's apparently some people looking at it in council, but I haven't been able to pin down exactly who and what they've actually are going to offer us here. My understanding is we will get the number plate recognition one out at Te Uku,
yeah.
But what else in the town area itself, I haven't got answers on.
So it was an application to a government fund, wasn't it, that the whole region did?
Yeah, the application in the end was done by Waikato Police, I believe.
Right.
And that sort of thing.
So is there now like a bun fight going on in the background between all the councils about who's going to get...
Oh, I don't know about that, Aaron. What would you even consider that each of that...
I just hope our council's going in hard.
No. The application was made for the Waikato District Council. So
okay.
It's not... I know District Council's in discussions with Hamilton City Council because Hamilton City Council... have the monitoring system in there,
yeah.
Monitoring building in there.
Oh, yeah.
And they look after the management and maintenance of the system. And
that's been an issue out here.
Yeah, and that sort of thing. So I think there's negotiations going on there as well as to, you know, how that's going to be funded as well.
Okay, and Alison Diaz, the financial officer, did say things to the effect that it was very... what was going on behind the scenes was very difficult and complicated and time-consuming, if I could summarise.
Yeah, and that's negotiations between Waikato District Council and Hamilton City Council trying to sort out how they're going to do that. Because I think also, complicated, it's all set up in regional council offices in Hamilton East.
Right, yeah. It does need to be done properly.
Yep.
Okay, civil defence planning, just remind us where that's all at.
Civil defence planning, basically sitting in my court at the moment, to be honest. Scott's we're going to catch up with Scott again in probably in the next three weeks or so.
Is the council staff member?
That'll be the emergency planning officer in council.
Yeah.
We've got a draft plan together to present to interested parties within the community. So I'm still hopeful that within the next couple of months we'll have that meeting.
Okay. We were waiting because our council has been overseas.
Yeah, yeah.
Is she back?
She's home. Yes.
She's home. Okay, all right. Well, maybe we'll get her in for an interview.
She's probably listening to this, and she's got COVID, I believe.
Just they're brilliant to come back home to New Zealand, get COVID. Yeah, Don McGlashan at the gig last night said that he and his support act both had COVID, and were 3 days out of it, but still feeling a bit light-headed.
Oh, fair enough. Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, it's definitely going around. Yeah. Okay. All right. So. Yeah, more to hear from that, but good to hear that the basic plan has been set up.
Yeah, no, we're definitely moving forward on that. We definitely understand the need to get that rolled out fairly soon.
Yeah. Speaking of things, well, that we might want fairly soon, the internal bus service have... I know some of that's been with regional council or consultants with regional council. Have we got a timeline?
No, I haven't. I need to talk to Andrew, as a consultant working for Regional Council, on it. The heads up that Regional Council had gone out for pricing,
yeah.
And that sort of thing, but we just need to find out with what routes he's finalising with those suppliers and that sort of thing. So I'll try and get hold of Andrew in the next week or so and have a chat to him.
But they are doing stuff.
But things are I'm led to believe things are moving forward.
Okay.
I need to confirm that.
I like the way you word that. You're not 100% trusting.
Well, I've been caught out before, Aaron. Just say that. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah, okay. At Greenslade Playground, what's been happening? A bit of action there?
Yeah, sounds like that's actually got some movement again at last, and I'm just checking my notes, but I've lost place where that was.
Dennis has got quite a lot of pieces of paper here. Should we go off my notes? They're not very thorough, but... I know where they are.
Oh, thanks, Aaron. the Greenside Road, apparently concept plans for two options have been prepared.
Okay.
So we just need to take those to the community now and get signed off on one of those or which one's preferred.
And they've got the location, like they were doing a whole ecological thing.
Yeah, there was an ecological study as to where best to locate it and things like that, which seems a bit over dramatic, but anyway. So if we've got the concept plans now, once we can get them signed off, hopefully we can move forward on the thing.
Okay. I didn't realise there were two concept plans, so that's why my notes are not really worth going to. Just a reminder to ask you questions.
But, you know, but they were doing an upgrade too, just talking about playgrounds on the one on Wallace Street, the playground there at the back of this Wallace Street's back of the where the Scout Hall is.
Yeah.
And that one, I think that should be just about finished now. So that was being upgraded as well.
Okay. All right. Something for the little kids. My kids aren't that little anymore. I've spent a lot of time at that Wallace Street playground. I was almost feel slightly traumatised by how much time I had to spend there. I haven't been back.
We spend some time in the one on Raglan West because our grandkids run down there as soon as they arrive.
Yeah, of course. Now, did the community board talk about the We Nearer walkway?
We only covered it in the Works and Actions report, but my understanding is that they're working on with that.
Dennis's phone is going berserk at the moment. We're just...
Sorry, Jesus, the fishing club's ringing me.
Oh, no. We haven't talked about fishing club stuff yet, have we? There will. Do you want a hammer? We'll just hit it with a hammer.
He's gone away.
Okay.
And so my understanding is there that council have been working with HEBS to look at some practical ways to do the remedial works.
HEBS is a company?
HEBS is a company that's doing the tidal stairs and everything down at the wharf.
Okay.
So while they've got them here, they've been picking their brains on different options. And trying to find an economic solution to doing that without having to do a whole lot of design work and things like that, so we can actually minimise the cost of doing it, which is a sensible approach to it. So we're just waiting to see what comes out from Niall and Richard on that.
Okay, and staff, consultants, Niall and Richard?
Niall works for council and Richard's project manager works for council.
Okay, all right. Now, you mentioned the wharf, and you were just down the wharf this morning. How are things down there?
Well, I knew you'd ask the question, so I thought I'd go for a ride and preempt you.
Yeah, very good.
Things are moving there. They've got some rocks on site, and things are starting to happen down there now.
Okay.
So that's good to see. It's going to be a little inconvenient for people, and we just ask people to bear with us for a few months because the road access on the western side of the silo is blocked off, obviously, all the work's going on along there.
Okay.
And there will be a big crane brought in at some point, which will be on the southeastern corner of the silo, which will be, you know, against the stand, basically on where the walkway is on the western side, but just on the wharf side of the silo.
So it could be a real traffic jam down there.
Yeah, so at times it could be. The construction teams had discussions with the Fishing Club and Coast Guard and various others to try and sort of look at minimising that congestion, how you get boats in and out of the wharf and things like that while the work's going on. So it's all possible. It just means a little bit more patience at times, that's all. So we just ask everyone to bear with us.
Okay. All right. Well, people should understand that. I have to ask about the Manu Bay breakwall. It's just a perpetual thing we ask about.
Yeah, and we get the same perpetual answer, I guess.
You're in the same position I am. You as a community board, you don't have control over the
council and the consultants. We know where the problem is now. Alison's come back and advised us where the problem is, and they're pushing that consultant now to get some answers out of him, some real-time frames as to when he's going to have his work done.
And because there's often a little bit of scuttlebutt about local consultants, this is not a local consultant that's holding things up at the moment.
No.
It was Tonkin and Taylor.
I'm not saying who.
Oh, you can't say. I can report what I heard. I just know what the rumour mill's like. I want to emphasise it's local.
No, it's an external contractor. We just need to put a bit more heat on them. They've had a lot on since Cyclone Gabriel with other structural works they've been working on, and this has obviously fallen to the bottom of the heap.
Yeah. Okay. That does make sense. There's maintenance happening at the rugby club. Is that there's kind of two buildings there. There's the rugby club, which I think the rugby club. Did they build that back in the day? And then there's the council buildings, which are the toilets and storerooms and things.
Yeah, it's the rugby club pavilion and changing rooms that are being basically being repainted and having a bit of an upgrade.
So it's not the club rooms? What does pavilion mean? Or is it everything?
To be honest with you, Aaron, this was the first I saw of it when it came up in the agenda, so I'm actually sure exactly which part of it is.
That's another one of those things.
But it talks about the pavilion area and the changing rooms and that sort of thing.
Okay, that's another one of those things that the staff haven't really informed the community board about.
Well, they've got a maintenance budget and they've got a whole lot of maintenance things on it, so yeah, it would be nice to get a bit more clarity on what's coming up, so yeah. That's what we'll be pushing for going forward.
Yeah, okay. Now, there's been lots of talk about erosion around Papahua, and I think there's going to be a meeting, or there has been a meeting. There was something discussed at the...
Yeah, there's a meeting planned for next week.
Yep.
I'm just trying to think what day it is, but there is a meeting planned for next week to have a look at the groin effect of the bridge.
Yes.
There was a study done a while back on that, and I've been now sent a copy of that report to have a read through. But yeah, there's a group of us getting together to have a look at that and what can be done, because there's some issues there for council, but also the Papahua Holiday Park obviously you've got concerns about the ongoing erosion and how it's going to be managed as well.
And Ngāti Mahanga, because I've got the memorial there as well, which is probably the first thing they're worried about, I imagine.
Well, that's probably the area which is eroding the most at the moment. So.
Yeah, it's a little bit alarming when you go down there, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not like the line of the shore is just creeping back slowly. It's like it's made a little incision into the landscape.
Yeah, it's chopped in at certain areas for some reason.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, there is some discussion going on that at the moment, so hopefully we can get something. And, you know, we've still got an opportunity to get something into LTP going forward as well.
Okay, so that's a long-term plan. Actually, let's just mention that for folks. The long-term plan is the council spending plan looking 10 years ahead. Every 3 years it's updated. There's a new update happening next year and it has to be ready for 1st of July, I think. So council staff are preparing documents already, I guess. In the community board, you guys will have a wish list that you want to get in early as well, I presume?
It's a pretty short wish. Yeah, well, we've so far had the opportunity to comment on the blueprint that was there. And that sort of thing, which we have done, which has a series of activities on it. And I can't remember those off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Our projects that we want for the community. But there should be, and we'll just have to look at what other projects we want over the next few months.
Okay, I've just had it.
Sorry?
No, go ahead.
But there is a series of LTP planning meetings over the next 6 or 8 weeks.
Okay. Someone's just asked me about, I think they were at the meeting about, there was a mention of the airfield ownership changing hands next year. So,
yeah, I'm not sure of the matter of it changing ownerships, but there's certainly negotiations going on around the ownership of the airfield as to what date it would change. I have no idea at the stage.
Yeah, I remember when the press release came out announcing that it would happen, there was talk that there was a lot of unusual legalities around that piece of land that would take a lot of working through.
Okay.
And it would be slow.
Yeah, no.
Just something I remember. The Freedom Camping, did we have anything to say about Freedom Camping? Because there's been an update, going to be an update to the bylaw, and people had made submissions.
Yeah, people have made submissions. Those submissions will be heard next week, starting Tuesday. Well, not sure when they start, but there are hearings going on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And the community board did make a submission on that.
Yeah.
And we've got an opportunity to present to that submission on Tuesday.
Okay, all right. I think that's all I've got. Have you got, is there anything else happening?
No,
exciting?
Those are the main things that are going on in town at the moment.
Okay.
I just reinforce on the Surf Life Saving Club
annual
reunion. Things are hotting up on that. So that's still planned for, it's planned for the 22nd of October.
Yep.
There's a whole lot of series of day activities that the team has worked out, and then a function in the Raglan Club on the Sunday night, the 22nd. So if people have been involved, want to be registered, want to be part of it, just go to the Surf Life Saving Club website, and under the tab about, you'll find a link to the reunion. You can register there.
Yep.
That sort of thing. There is some memorabilia that will be available, and also a book on the history of the Surf Life Saving Club is being written as well. So there's a lot going on and a lot being done around that reunion to make it quite some event to celebrate. So we've also got some of the original members from the 70s coming.
Okay.
Three or four of them have indicated that they're keen to come and that sort of thing, and it's been quite interesting talking to them and getting the history of the club back in those days.
Yeah, I bet it was different.
Yeah. Things were a lot harder and a lot tougher for sure.
Mm. And we should also mention that the community board gave $2,000 from its discretionary fund for the history, the writing of the history. Was that, I got that right?
Yeah. For the printing of the book.
The printing of the book.
The writing of the book and all the research has been done for nothing. It's just getting the book printed. There's a cost associated with that.
Okay. And we need to say you're associated with the Surf Life Saving Club, so you had no part in that decision on the community board.
No, well, I was choking myself to death at that point in time anyway, Aaron. So.
Yeah, I was there. He was coughing a lot. I handed over to Chris, the deputy chair. But yeah, I mean, again, the way rumours go around town.
Yeah, that's for sure, yeah. We do have that disclosure of interest part at the start of the meeting where if there's something coming up where people potentially have a financial interest in anything that's in the agenda, they can disclose that.
You don't really have a financial interest in the surf club,
we don't. No, we don't have a financial interest in it. We're not getting any benefit out of it. In fact, because my wife's writing the book, it's actually costing us a hell of a lot. Travel and petrol and everything going around interviewing people. So, but that's, you know, all in the fun of doing it.
Yeah, okay. Well, we look forward to the book coming out, and maybe we'll have a chat with her when it's ready to go.
That'd be excellent.
Okay, Dennis, thank you for coming in.
Thanks, Aaron. I'll go enjoy a beautiful day.
Hi, it is a good day, isn't it?